Okay, good morning. And thank you, Ken. Are you able to hear me now? All right, wonderful. Welcome to to the sanctuary. And it's wonderful to be back with you all. We're already sailing through 2018 at a quite at quite a fast rate here. Here we are already in the month of August. So I want to release this mic and ask Lynn to play our opening song and while we greet one another here in the sanctuary this morning. So Lynn, this mic is yours.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love. Are awakening to a long forgotten memory. Dawn is breaking, waves are coming in. Everybody here standing in wonder beneath the rain and the thunder, rising in love.
All right, thank you so much, Lynn, for that opening song, and so very good to see you all from all over, really, and glad everyone is doing well this morning. So I'm going to get to our statement of purpose here at Awakening Together. Awakening Together is a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so that we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. All right, that is our statement of purpose here at Awakening Together, and that brings me right up to our announcements for this week. And first up, starting this month, the Awakening Together Sanctuary will be closed on Mondays. Our sanctuary hours change from time to time, because of changes in how the sanctuary is used. We decided to close on Mondays because very few people come into the sanctuary on Monday. Also, there were unfilled slots in the Monday schedule. In the future, if there is a new teaching or group that interests our members, we may open the sanctuary on a day or evening that will accommodate that. For example, since earlier this year, the sanctuary is open on Tuesday mornings to accommodate a second gentle healing group. We can expect the sanctuary hours to change from time to time as we serve the spiritual interest of our members. So yes, keep that in mind starting this month that our sanctuary will be closed on Mondays. Okay, next up, if you haven't yet voted for this year's trustee election, please vote today or tomorrow. Voting ends at 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, August 6th. There are three available seats open on the Member Board of Trustees, and there are four nominees. You can vote for three of the four nominees. If you don't know the nominees, you can learn more about them by going to awakening-together.org and clicking Things to Read on the menu bar. You'll find information about each nominee under that menu. Only members of Awakening Together are allowed to vote. If you are a member and did not receive a ballot or misplaced it, email Regina at reginadawnakers@yahoo.com and request the link to the ballot. So again, tomorrow, the last day to vote on the upcoming trustee election there. And the third announcement is Regina asked me to share an update regarding our project to acquire a retreat house in La Vida. 100% of the people who made commitments to donate money once an offer was accepted have kept their commitments and donated the money they promised to donate. So thank you very much. Thanks to you, we've raised a little over $290,000. Also, the bank has given us a letter approving our loan for $80,000, pending the appraisal, which is scheduled for August 20th. The town of La Vida has given us a letter giving us permission to have a retreat house in the town limits. The inspection was on Friday, and we are now negotiating with the seller based on the inspection results. We will continue to keep you informed as we move forward with this process. So great news there regarding the retreat house in La Vida. It looks like everything is right on track, and we are definitely moving in the direction of one day very soon having the retreat house. So that is wonderful news. All right, so that concludes our announcements for this week. I'm going to ask Lynn to play another song for us. And after that song, I will rejoin you for the next part of the gathering. So Lynn, this mic is yours.
Let not nothing remains. For I am. For I am. For
all right, thank you, Lynn, for that lovely, lovely song. And if you all will join me now as we have a moment of prayer as we get ready for today's gathering. I am deeply grateful for the invisible hand that Reverend Karen Wirth talked about during the meditation today. The invisible hand that guided me and gave me the topic for discussion today. I'm deeply grateful that the ground had already been laid to receive that information and process it and allow it to do what it was here to do. I pray and ask today that anyone who hears this message and is also in a position to receive it, to process it, to use it, and to allow it to do what it's doing in my life. I give thanks for that. Deeply grateful for everyone who's here, for the work that Awakening Together continues to do. And so that same invisible hand that gave the message, I trust that that same invisible hand will now deliver the message. And so I just give thanks. I give thanks for the opportunity to be here to share in my experience, not to teach, but simply to share. And so it is, and so I let it be. Amen. All right, so the topic of today's gathering is simply 6 seconds. And today's reader is Reverend Karen Wirth. She'll be reading for us today from A Course in Miracles, from the teacher's manual there, chapter 8. Quite appropriately, this is the 8th month. So there, she's going to read from us from chapter 8, which is avoiding the perceptions of the order of difficulties. So Karen, this mic is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with everybody and to read out of one of my favorite books. So, yep, chapter 8 from the Manual for Teachers. The question is, how can perception of order of difficulties be avoided? The belief in order of difficulties is the basis for the world's perception. It rests on differences, on uneven background and shifting foreground, on unequal heights and diverse sizes, on varying degrees of darkness and light, and thousands of contrasts in which each thing seen competes with every other in order to be recognized. A larger object overshadows a smaller one. A brighter thing draws the attention attention from another with less intensity of appeal. And a more threatening idea, or one conceived of as more desirable by the world's standards, completely upsets the mental balance. What the body's eyes behold is only conflict. Look not to them for peace and understanding. Illusions are always illusions of differences. How could it be otherwise? By definition, an illusion is an attempt to make something real that is regarded as of major importance, but is recognized as being untrue. The mind therefore seeks to make it true out of its intensity of desire to have it for itself. Illusions are travesties of creation, attempts to bring truth to lies. Finding truth unacceptable, the mind revolts against truth and gives itself an illusion of victory. Finding health a burden, it retreats into feverish dreams. And in these dreams, the mind is separate, different from other minds, with different interests of its own, and able to gratify its needs at the expense of others. Where do all these differences come from? Certainly they seem to be in the world outside, yet it is surely the mind judges what the eyes behold. It is the mind that interprets the eyes' message and gives them meaning. And this meaning does not exist in the world outside at all. What is seen as reality is simply what the mind prefers. Its hierarchy of values is projected outward, and it sends the body's eyes to find it. The body's eyes will never see except through differences. Yet it is not the messages they bring on which perception rests. Only the mind evaluates their messages, and so only the mind is responsible for seeing. The mind alone decides whether what is seen is real or illusory, desirable or undesirable, pleasurable or painful. It is in the sorting out and categorizing activities of the mind that errors in perception enter. And it is here correction must be made. The mind classifies what the body's eyes bring to it according to its preconceived values, judging where each sense datum fits best. What basis could be faultier than this? Unrecognized by itself, it has itself asked to be given what will fit into these categories. And having done so, it concludes that the categories must be true. On this judgment of all differences rests, because it is on this that judgment of the world depends. Can this confused and senseless reasoning be depended on? for anything? There can be no order of difficulty in healing merely because all sickness is illusion. Is it harder to dispel the belief of the insane in a larger hallucination as opposed to a smaller one? Will he agree more quickly to the unreality of a louder voice he hears than to that of a softer one? Will he dismiss more easily a whispered demand to kill than a shout? And do the number of pitchforks the devil he sees carrying affect their credibility in his perception? His mind has categorized them all as real, and so they are all real to him. When he realizes they are all illusions, they will disappear. And so it is with healing. The properties of illusions, which seem to make them different, are really irrelevant. For their properties are as illusory as they are. The body's eyes will continue to see differences, but the mind that has let itself be healed will no longer acknowledge them. There will be those who seem to be sicker than others, and the body's eyes will report their changed appearances as before, but the healed mind will put them all in one category. They are unreal. This is the gift of its teacher, the understanding that only two categories are meaningful, and sorting out the messages the mind receives from what appears to be the outside world. And of these two, but one is real. Just as reality is wholly real, apart from size and shape and time and place, for differences cannot exist within it. So too are illusions without distinctions. The one answer to sickness of any kind is healing. The one answer to all illusions is truth. And that's the end of chapter 8. Thank you, Gloria, for letting me share.
All right. Thank you so much, Reverend Karen. Beautifully read, as always, as I knew it would be. Your voice is just so melodic to me. So, again, that was Chapter 8. From the teacher's manual. I do want to share our core value, the Awakening Together core value that I'll be speaking about today is core value number 3. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. All right, that is core value number 3. All right, so today's reading, in the very first sentence of today's reading, really does capture the essence of the entire reading, in my opinion, and it really goes on to define the meaning or what was being relayed in the entire reading there. And that first sentence again is, the belief in the order of difficulties is the basis of the world's perception, and it rests on differences. So right there we can see that belief in order of difficulties, the belief is the basis of our perception, and all of that rests in differences or judgments, you know, as we would more commonly know them to be. Differences are really an illusion, and they totally solidify the belief in separateness. And here's what the reading had to say about illusions. It said that illusions are always illusions of differences. How could it be otherwise? By definition, an illusion is an attempt to make something real that is regarded as of major importance but recognized as being untrue. The mind therefore seeks to make it truth out of its intensity of desire to have it for itself. So right there we can see why we value illusions, why we value what we believe in, because we're attached to those beliefs, right? They're cemented. And, you know, when I read this, I thought, you know, it sounded a lot like what a belief is, this particular paragraph, because we also know that beliefs are actually born when we're emotionally invested in something, you know, and that thing that we're emotionally invested in doesn't really stand up to the old sniff test, right? If it's not true for all of the people all of the time, that's probably a belief that, you know, we give our power of attention to for probably a really long time. You know, that's where beliefs come from. That's how beliefs are created. And these illusions that this particular reading is speaking to is the basis for how we perceive, what we perceive in the world. And it's really a critical factor, I think, to the entire process of awakening. You know, recently I was watching some videos. My husband and I, we were watching some videos on YouTube. We came across a clip. It was a clip of a concert. It was a rapper's, Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre, and they were having this concert, and they had a hologram of another rapper, Tupac, who died back in the 90s. He appeared in their performance via the hologram. All right? I saw the same thing done by Britney Spears, who, you know, of course she's still among the living, but she also performed in one of these hologram performances in a duo she did with another singer. So seeing those images kind of sparked in me a natural curiosity to look closer at what holograms were. When I looked at the images, they were, you know, the hologram was just as clear as the individual standing there who was actually, quote unquote, there. So I wanted to look more, and I did. I looked more. That curiosity led me to look at holograms, you know, just general stuff. I wanted to know what that was. What? How does that work? How can we see someone who's not there? So, again, that curiosity just kind of led me to a couple of different works that turned out to really lead to other things that I really didn't set out to. I wasn't looking for what I ended up finding and what the connections that I ended up making. So I'm deeply grateful for that. But the curiosity led me to works like The Holographic Universe by, I believe, Michael Talbot, and The Field by Lynn McTaggart. Now, I didn't read either of these books completely, but I looked at them and was drawn to very specific areas of these books and the information that that I was looking at. You know, I was just looking at very just kind of glossing over it, if you will, you know, picking up certain pieces and parts of it. One of the things that I looked at was a paper that was written by a scientist named Mark Germain. And the name of the paper was The Holographic Principle of Mind and Evolutionary Consciousness. I have a snippet here of what was in that paper. Again, this was one of the areas that I was drawn to within the paper, not the entire paper that was written. And that snippet reads, "Our perception creates a duality of subject and object. Of the subjective and the objective, we think of information as objective and experience as subjective. In fact, no such dualities exist. Information and experience are one and the same. Every particle in the universe is alive with experience. Every organism is alive with experience. The universe is alive with experience. All on the universal level, experience is one. We are one with this universal experience." All right, end quote there. Does that sound familiar? Right? That's exactly what I thought. The snippets that I was connecting to sounded so powerfully familiar to what I've already understand to be the truth. Again, we see in that snippet that it's our perception that creates the sense of duality. And again, we know that those perceptions are based on beliefs that we hold. No matter what the origin of the belief, be it from our childhood or from even from this spiritual path, beliefs are what create the illusion that cause us to buy into the order of difficulties. Now, getting back to this intriguing evidence that I discovered when I was looking at the principles of holograms, that led me to a very clear shift in my perception. And, you know, I was guided to one thing after another. And then I also discovered another experience or experiment that some of you may already be familiar with. Maybe some of you are already very familiar with the whole holographic thing. You know, I don't know. It was news to me to some degree. I had heard of it, but I really didn't know about the parallels to spirituality within that. So the experiment that I looked at, you know, a group of scientists, they took several subjects. They hooked them up to these sensors. And then they began to flash these random images on a screen in front of them to provoke. And some of the images were like emotional images, and others were just plain images of something like a tree or a street or something of that nature. Just plain, nothing emotional about it. So the sensors that the participants wore, they were designed to measure their bodily changes, like things that happen to the body when we when an emotional response is evoked in us. Things like our heart rate spiking or the temperature in our finger. They had sensors on their fingers because blood would, you know, your blood flow spikes too. So there's all these bodily changes that happen when we're exposed to an emotional, something emotional. So these people were hooked up with these devices to measure those changes in bodily functions. All right? What the scientists discovered there is that 6 seconds, 6 seconds before the image, the random image appeared on the screen, there was a spike in their bodily functions. Now, when the subject was shown a neutral picture, nothing happened. Nothing happened prior to the 6 seconds. But when that emotional image, like a plane blowing up or a house on fire, when some sort of emotional image was shown to these subjects, they consistently had a bodily response 6 seconds prior to that occurring. So, what does that mean for us on this spiritual path, on this path to awakening? How does the fact that this has been clearly proven and documented, that there's an intelligence operating outside of our conscious perception, and that intelligence, that invisible hand, again, that Reverend Karen Worth talked about during the meditation today, that invisible hand is operating and informing us of our actions, of what action, reaction, not necessarily the reaction there, but that invisible force intelligence is informing us, the body, a full 6 seconds prior to an action being taken. So the first thing I want to do is experiment with you guys a little bit. I want us to get an idea of just how long 6 seconds is. All right, so here we go. 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, 4 1,000, 5 1,000, 6 1,000. That's how long 6 seconds is, literally. If we were to take that experiment one step further and look more closely at where that prompt is coming from, the individuals in this study that they were able to measure these bodily responses in, what was giving them the impetus to the body, the impetus to respond like that prior to knowing what they would see? And we begin to see at this point what this has to do with our spiritual path, with the awakening, with the learning, the unlearning that we've been doing over however long you've been on your spiritual path. We begin to see how these two are tied in, how this whole principle of that I was looking at here, I began to see the tie-in. Although even before looking at this experiment, I had already had so many parallels, so many. The clip that I just read from a scientific paper was exactly, you know, it's so similar to what we already know. But the prompt that was received, according to works like Lynn McTaggart that I looked at, as well as everything else that really came into my awareness, including, like I said, the groundwork that's been done here in this setting, prior to this setting, it's clearly consciousness. Awareness, all that is, the creator, the universe, whatever label you've attached to that presence, that intelligence, whatever works for you there, is what's informing the body that full 6 seconds prior to the action being taken. So if we were to look a little closer at the implications here, if consciousness is informing the small self a full 6 seconds prior to us becoming consciously aware of any given action that we're going to take, we can't possibly control the prompts that we receive. There's no way. But we do have complete free will about what we, how we react to what we see. So getting back to the experiment that I looked at, either of those participants in that, let's say they saw a house burning, you know, and, you know, maybe people running out of the house, you know, it would have been on that subject how they wanted to respond, whether they wanted to start crying, whether they wanted to start praying, whether they wanted to start, whatever action they chose to take after the prompt came in that here's a, you know, something's coming, that was on them. That's where free will comes in. How we perceive what's happening. Again, getting back to this perception being the basis of the illusory, the belief in this illusion. We have the ability to choose what we do with what comes in, how we react to what comes in. And what I discovered during the course of looking at this, and it was very liberating to me. It was extremely liberating to me when I experienced this at a very deep level, that the dissidence that I had continued to experience as a result of this low-lying sense of guilt, sense of, you know, how things have worked out in this life, how things are shaping up, how people are responding, how circumstances are responding. If I apply this 6 second rule to not only myself, but to everyone and everything, then all shame, guilt, everything has to go, because the prompt is also being received by everyone, everywhere. It speaks to our connection to each other as well as to the Creator, God, the universe, as I said, whatever name works for you there. You know, guilt, shame, and blame have to go if everyone is being informed by this higher intelligence, by this higher force. What could anyone be guilty of other than what their resistance to what's happening, their response, again, to what's happening, which, and we know that we will always respond to life based on what we believe. We will always respond to the prompts coming in based on what we believe. And how it ties into this particular reading today with the order of the difficulty of the order of difficulties, I always mix up that title, but how it ties into that is that if the premise that we begin with is that this is not reality, because going further with what I discovered during the course of looking at this principle, this holographic principle. First of all, let's recall what this reading had to say about illusions. By definition, an illusion is an attempt to make something real that is regarded as of major importance but is recognized as being untrue. What I discovered is that this reality is more like a hologram, like what I saw on the concert that started this whole thing. I was looking at a concert. I wasn't looking to discover the answers of the universe. I wasn't looking to go out on a mission to uncover this unfathomable truth. I was simply watching a concert, and it led to all of this unfolding. Again, the invisible hand is at work. More evidence to me that the invisible hand is at work, prompting, giving the prompts that are needed for whatever actions I need to take, which means I don't need to plan anything. I don't need to worry about what's going to happen next or who's going to say what or what direction, because the prompts are coming. They've always been coming. So this holographic reality, like the one we live in, is not our true reality. We're all players, very similar to the avatars in video games. Reverend Jay submitted an article in our last newsletter, and he talked about this reality being more like a video game in his talk, and I do have a snippet of something he said from that I'll share with you in a moment here. But this holographic video game, this illusional 3D reality, you know, so similar to what I saw in those concert performances, that has to be the premise. Otherwise, everything else is, we're getting into that order of difficulties. Well, there's differences and illusions and beliefs and ideas. If the premise, the initial premise has to be, this is not reality. And then whatever emerges from there, we understand, I began to understand that it's a result of these promptings that are happening, that are coming in from a higher intelligence. And even that came up to me as something to look at, referring to this as a higher intelligence, although it is very much all knowing. That's something else. What's more important to me here is the realization that no one is guilty. I mean, really realizing, yes, I've read that, I've heard that many times here, but I still couldn't quite understand is not the right word. I still couldn't quite reconcile how that could be. Now it makes much more sense. The light has come on. I can see how that could be, right? These promptings are creating the what options, the choices that we have. And Regina talked about this before as well with the flow. It's again another similar parallel teaching to the flow, that everything is being given to us, but somehow in this mind, seeing it in this along with the information about the holographic universe, made this all make perfect sense. It was one of those things where I went, of course. Now I can see that there's no amount of effort, no amount of doing or trying or efforting to be anything other than what's given to you or me to be, what's given to you or me to say, what's given to you or me to do. There's no amount of efforting that will change those choices, those options that we have available to us. Now I see how what Adi Ashanti was talking about when he said that it's possible to live effortlessly. It's possible to move through this world without any real concern about what's going on, any real concern about what you can do to make things different. I see the light. And again, that it was very liberating in a sense that knowing, like the cognitive dissonance that I've talked about before, knowing that God is love, but these eyes witnessing pain and suffering, and the attempts that were being made on my behalf to hold my spirituality up as some sort of armor or some sort of repellent against what's unfavorable, what I don't want to see, what I don't want to experience. That's no longer necessary, because I've come to a place where I accept that consciousness is informing this game that we're in, this unreality that we're all a part of. Consciousness is informing this reality down to the smallest, teeniest, tiniest detail. Now, the 6 seconds that I've been talking about, I gave the example of 1-1000, 2-1000. When you're in real life, that 6 seconds is more like this. It's over. You know what I mean? 6 seconds is gone. We don't. But now that has really come into my awareness, I consciously think about the 6 seconds. You know, if I'm experiencing or dealing with someone who's discomfort, any level of discomfort coming in any form, whether it be from a person, a situation, anything, any level of discomfort whatsoever, I step back away from that, accept that it's not real, and I remember, okay, that 6 seconds, that is what's informing this situation. Now, I can look and be with, if it's a person, I can be with them in a more compassionate way, because I know they have no choice whatsoever on the promptings they're receiving. And I also can't judge them for not being more aware, more awake to the fact that this is not reality. If those promptings to wake up from dream ever come to the people and situations that I see, then that'll be fine too. But if not, that's okay too. You see, the liberation that I received at, you know, really a critical time. At any time is critical, really, for something like this for me, you know, to come forward for me and into my reality. The prompting, again, as I was looking and learning about this, it just so much made sense, so many things. I was able to even go back and reprocess some of the areas where I knew I was still holding on to guilt or fear. For instance, in the case of the loss of my granddaughter 4 years ago now, still had some sense of guilt, still held on because she was in another state, I was here, but somehow I was in one state and she was in the other, but somehow I still felt that there was something more that I could have done or said or some other action that I could have taken to have stopped prevented or averted what happened to her. With this information, I was able to go back and see, no. There was no prompt to do any of the things that this mind imagined after the fact. Those prompts weren't there. So it wasn't just to that this was applied. It was to any other area where I knew that underlying sense of unrest is still there. No matter how much praying I'm doing, no matter how much meditating, no matter how much believing I'm doing in the processes that I'm working with, still that underlying very low level sense of unrest, imbalance. So, not to say that I've worked through every single thing that I've had to work through in that way. Certainly I have not. But one thing that I know is that I'm the knowingness is here now, that the reality, what I believe myself to be, what I believe this world to be, is not the reality. Bottom line, it's not. It's not true reality. So as I mentioned, I do have a small excerpt here from Reverend Jay's submission, which was, hopefully you've all had the opportunity to look at our last edition of the newsletter from the subcommittee. But Reverend Jay wrote, so my point in reading this again is that we do know these things. We know, just like when there were certain things that I came across, okay, I know that, I understand that, I got that part, but then there were other parts that really seemed to work together with what was already there to take that to another level, to take me, to take this being to another level of understanding about how all of this, how I fit into all of this, about what this is. So getting back, Reverend Jay wrote, relish the experiences that result, pleasant or unpleasant. Just fully participate while observing the best you can. I have found my ability to observe and remember has grown more the more I practice this. I have learned to let myself be guided by my heart or spiritual intuition more and more. The more I practice this, the more I remember the unchanging truth that lies beyond appearances and increases my willingness to see it as not real at all. Right? So we know what the goal is. The goal is to see this reality for what it is. And for me, having this additional information about the holographic universe and how, not at all having a full understanding of how that works, but enough to where it worked within me to bring forth a deeper understanding of this prompting. Again, that I was able to remember, and the reason why I named this particular sharing today is 6 seconds. That's the easiest way for me to remember that these promptings aren't coming from this small self. This small self is only perceiving what's being received from these promptings that are occurring roughly 6 seconds before I'm even consciously aware, right? The body was, and that makes sense as to why, I've certainly read about, the intelligence of the body. What is it called? The testing that they do when the body gives the answer. I forget what the name of that is, but I've certainly read about that whole possibility before this. But now it just all it all makes sense, all of it. I mean, there's nothing for me to plan about. There's nothing for me to be guilty about. There's nothing for me to worry or concern myself about what's happening in the lives of other people. There's no reason for it. I can be free, truly free, from that level of understanding now. And I'm deeply grateful for that. And it's something that I wanted to share with you all today. So, you know, I truly feel complete with what I wanted to share here. I do want to close with an excerpt again from today's teaching, from the teacher's manual, the very last paragraph there. The body's eyes will continue to see differences, but the mind that has let itself be healed will no longer acknowledge them. There will be those who seem to be sicker than others, and the body's eyes will report their changed appearance as before. But the healed mind will put them all in one category, and that is they are unreal. This is the gift of its teacher, the understanding that only two categories are meaningful in sorting out the messages the mind receives from what appears to be the outside world. And of these two, but one is real. Just as reality is wholly real apart from size, shape, time, place, for differences cannot exist within it, so too are illusions without distinctions. The one answer to sickness of any kind is healing, and the one answer to all illusion is truth. So I just want to encourage each of you to get out there, to play the game, to have fun in the game. Cling to nothing, embrace everything, and just remember that this is indeed the game of life created by consciousness, in consciousness, and for consciousness. And that we, my dearest beloveds, are the living, deeply loved, connected avatars. And we can only do what consciousness gives us to do at any given moment. All right? So have compassion for other players and yourself as we play this game of life. All right? So that concludes what I wanted to share. I'm a little over today. I was a little very zealous about this topic. And I want to ask that, Ken, if you would post a link in the room for anyone who'd like to make a donation. I'm also going to ask Lynn to play us a song as we contemplate what I've shared, as we contemplate. And of course, as always, if anything comes up for you, you'll have the time to share after we're done here. All right, so Lynn, I'm releasing this mic to you, and as always, love to you all.
Because I've forgotten it, it has been kept for me in the mind of God. It has been kept for me in the mind of God. Oh, God, isn't everything that's been kept for me in the mind of God, who has not left his thoughts. And I, who am among them, am one with them and one with him. It has been kept for me in the mind of God.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for that song. And it looks like our time is about out for the gathering today. I do want to say that if anyone would like to share, you're welcome to stay over. Reverend Ken and Reverend Rebecca will be doing our fellowship time directly following the gathering today. I am going to release the mic now and give it back to Ken or ask Lynn to play us the closing song for the gathering. Again, if you would like to share, you're welcome to stay over.
Forever from all suffering. Thanks for the fatherland. Thanks for the